Hey, what it do, sports fans? Welcome to the Sports Live podcast brought to you by Multimedia Live. I'm Sboom Jikeliso, your host, and I will be joined by various guests on this exciting new podcast to discuss the latest ins and outs of the sporting world. Wow, what a week we've had, good and bad, in our sporting land. Welcome to another episode of the Sports Live podcast. The Proteas are out of the Cricket World Cup. Defeat to Pakistan by 49 runs on Sunday night confirmed this. It is the worst performance by a South African team at a Cricket World Cup, in my view. They have so far managed just one win against Afghanistan and a no result against the West Indies to go with defeats to England, Bangladesh, India, New Zealand, and Mickey Arthur's Pakistan. It's official. Cricket is in turmoil. The mother body, Cricket South Africa, is facing an uncertain future as they have predicted 654 million rand in losses over the next 4 years. The coach, Otis Gibson's contract is coming to an end after South Africa's game against Australia on July 6th and will probably not be renewed. A slew of players such as Dale Steyn, Hashim Amla, JP Dumine and Imran Tahir will call time on their international careers. Some say that Kagiso Rabada was overbold and looked tired. Perhaps he needs a rest. Some say that the batting coach, Dale Bankenstein, should take the can. Others have pointed the finger at CSA's executive structures, while some blame the selectors for picking on sentiment rather than form. What went wrong? What we want to know from you is who should stay and who should go. Players, coaches, administrators, you can take your pick of people who should make way for more capable stand-ins. Please use the hashtag ProteaFired and hashtag SportsLive to express your views, and let's get that conversation going. Bearing in mind that Chief Selector Linda Zondi's time is up, who should replace him? And who should be the next Proteas coach after Otis? Should it be Mark Boucher, Jacques Callis, Lance Klusner, Makhaya Ntini, Malibongwe Maketa, Jeff Toyan, or someone from abroad again? Let us know using the hashtag ProteaFired and hashtag SportsLive to express your views, and let us get that conversation going. The following 26 players have gathered in the first Springbok camp of the upcoming international rugby season, and they include forwards Skalk Brits, Marcel Kutsia, Ruud Diaga, Peter Steph Du Toit, Reinand Elstad, Eben Etzebeth, Stephen Kitsoff, Vincent Koch, Siya Kolisi, Frans Malherbe, Malcolm Marks, Bongimbo Nambi, Tendai the Beast, Mtawarira, Franco Mostert, Marvin Ori, as well as Kwagga Smith. The backs are Damien Dialende, Faf de Klerk, Apiwe Yankee, Elton Yankees, Herschel Yankees, no relation, Cheslin Colby, Dylan Lades, Willy Leroux, Corbus Reynach, and a recall for Franz Steyn from Montpellier. Players who have participated in last weekend's Super Rugby playoffs from the Sharks and the Bulls were not considered and will join the camp at a later stage. Staying with rugby, the Craven Week is starting in Bloemfontein on July 1st to July 6th, and one of the standout teams from last year were Border. They finished the week in Paarl as one of only two unbeaten teams, the other being unofficial champions Western Province. We managed to catch up with one of Border's coaches, James Winstanley, who has overseen the wonderful turnaround at the troubled Union. Here's James Winstanley chatting to Blue Bulls, former Blue Bulls, and former Border Bulldogs hooker Ludwe Boy ahead of the tournament.
This is Ludwe Boy, joined by James Winstanley, the current assistant coach for the Craven Week, director of rugby at Hudson Park. James, how are you?
Good. Good to have this chat.
Yeah, James. I was hoping to pick your mind a little bit just about, obviously, Craven Week preparations, this being your second year in the setup. I was hoping just to maybe hear how the preparations are going this year.
Yeah, I think both years, each year is similar but different, you know. So where there's similarities, obviously a strong core group of Selbornean players, of which, you know, we build our game plan around. It makes a lot of sense in terms of cohesion. But that said, you know, the profile of the team is very different. You know, last year was a really athletic side, and I'd like to think this one's a bit smarter. So the way we're playing is similar but different. The way we're coaching is similar but different. So, yeah, it's got its own identity and feel, and we're very excited for the tournament.
Just speaking on last year's performance, 3 out of 3, unprecedented in the Border region. How do you feel your chances are this year?
I think as a side we're really confident. You know, what last year did was show everyone that when we play to our potential, we can play well and beat good sides. So going into this year, we've got a harder seeding, a harder draw, and it's live to die fight sort of stuff on the first day against the Bulls. You know, all bets are on that game. If we win that, then I think we can go really far in the competition.
It's interesting you say that. You know, obviously this year you should have a marker on your back. Teams will know and prepare better without disrespecting border. Have you taken this into account with all the preparations that you guys are doing? And secondly, the team cohesion itself, something you guys got quite well this year. I see there's a less number of Selborne players. Will that have any influence at all?
I don't know about it so much a bull's eye on our back, to be honest with you. If anything, teams are more fearful, you know. So, you know, we're coming into it in a position of strength, being the underdog, knowing that you really don't want to lose to border is actually giving us a lot more in the way of confidence. So, you know, we take strength out of that, and we know that the pressure on them is greater than it is on us. You know, in terms of cohesion, last year I suppose it was a bigger challenge to get cohesion because there were only 7 players from other schools, whereas this year it's an increased number of another 3. We're looking at 10 guys. So if anything, cohesion's been easier this year because there's been greater diversity, you know, in terms of total composition of the team. So, yeah, again, team's very confident. We're looking good, and it doesn't matter what they think about us. They know they're in for a game.
I like the confidence, mate.
Now, before moving on to our special guest and the conversation for this week's episode, I'd like to give a major shout out to SA's women's hockey team, who are on the brink of qualifying for the 2020 Tokyo Olympic Games. They beat Thailand 7-0 in the FIH Hockey Series Finals in Valencia over the weekend to book a guaranteed semifinal place. The other guaranteed semifinalists are Canada, who are coached by a South African, Giles Bonnet from Durban. I'll be posting and retweeting updates on that tournament on my Twitter account at @smoo_mjigeli. So this week, using the hashtag #sportslive. So keep an eye out for those. Right, and now onto our main course. All right, we're chatting to Mark Stryker Stradom, Marky Mark, a colleague of mine, friend of mine, about the Africa Cup of Nations in Egypt. Slight disclaimer, this is being recorded before the start of the tournament, so we will jump straight to Bafana Bafana's group stage games against the Ivory Coast, Namibia, and Morocco. By the time you hear this, South Africa would have played and hopefully beaten the Ivory Coast. But before we get into the exciting AFCON stuff, I want to start off this conversation with something very, very interesting that piqued my interest, that Mark Stradom wrote, and that involves a team of prisoners and prison officials called Helder's Room Football Club, who won the SAFA Overberg Region's SAB League, which is the fourth division in South African football. And most remarkably, they beat the South African Police Service, Police FC, on their way to the title. How's that for irony? Victory for Helder's Room FC meant that the Correctional Services prison in Caledon in the Western Cape had representation at the semi-professional ABC Motsepe League playoffs that were held in Beaufort West this week. Mark Stradom wrote the story, which is on Times Live. Just go on there and search for it. And he's here to chat about this rather bizarre turn of events. Mark, welcome to the podcast, and tell us, how in the world does a team of prisoners win a regional league title in South African football?
Yeah, Spoo, my friend Spoo as well. Good to see you again, Cheeks. It's good to have you back in the Tissot Black Star corridors.
Thanks, Mark.
For having me on your podcast. So, I mean, this prison story basically was something someone tweeted us about it and drew our attention to us, and we thought, oh geez, we've got to call these guys and find out about this. And you know, that's, you know, the amazing part of social media is that these stories come to light.
Look
how they did it. Basically, they've got a coach, Bumji Gonsana, who was a player in the Western Cape, but I think at amateur level, and he's passionate about football. He works at the prison in their sport and recreation department. He was sent a few years ago he coached the LFA. It's the Overberg region of SAFA.
Okay.
He coached the guy who became president of that LFA. He coached him as a player. And so his ex-player sent him to SAFA to put him on one of these SAFA coaching courses.
Okay.
And I think he got his SAFA C license or something like that. It's not, I'm not 100% sure.
And he decides to coach the prisoners.
And then the prison had a rugby team that was playing in an organized league. But they didn't have a football team, and they thought, you know, that's a complete oversight. So he then went back to his old LFA president and said,
yeah,
we need a team in your LFA playing. Not the LFA president, the regional president said, we need a team in this local football association around Caledon, where they are, is Helderstrom Prison. And we think we need to have a team that's participating. It's rehabilitative. It's only players on good who've had a decent behavior record and too long a sentence. So it's incentive based, and so they got a team into the LFA. They won the LFA in their first season. They got
they won promotion to the SAB league.
They won the promotion to the SAB league, which is
in their first
season in the LFA. Also, because this coach had a coaching license and he'd been coached, he'd had that sort of a bit of coaching input. He'd learned a bit of coaching from his SAFA courses, and then he started going around to other prisons in the Western Cape. I mean, and when you talk about transfer system with prisons,
now the Department of Correctional Services. Yeah. I mean, they might want to jump in here and get 10% of whatever money is transferred between these transfers. Like, who are the superstars of the prison teams? I'm sure somewhere someone in Caledon knows who's the most sought after prisoner in those leagues.
And it brought, so it brings a whole new meaning to the sort of transfer system. And he sort of went around to other prison scouted players and asked them to organize matches, and they would transfer those players to their prison. And so next thing, they had a strong team, and they finished second in that SAB league in their first season. And then this past season, they won that league. The team that came second was Police FC, the local police team from that Overberg region. And they are competing in, and because we are talking before this weekend,
they would have
competed in the playoffs this past week.
Now, if you're a footballer, right, and they're telling you you're up against a team of prisoners, don't they have like the unfair advantage of like intimidation? You know, I don't know. I think you might want to think twice before you go in two-footed against a guy. You know, maybe he's not in for a serious crime. But, you know, maybe petty theft, been around the block a little bit, certainly knows how to elbow his way through the six-yard area. I don't know.
Maybe this explains a lot.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, everyone I spoke to basically said they were the best behaved team. And I guess, as prisoners, they were out there to represent to actually show a good side of the prison system. And apparently the games against the police team were like a derby. It was super competitive, but also super clean.
I can get why. Obviously, you can get why. You know, maybe the police team, you know, you have a, it's a grudge game. Let's call it a grudge game.
Absolutely. I mean, they're the people who put you there in the first place.
You know,
I think there's so many levels to the story, though, that are actually quite funny, because I mean, it's like a nice, uplifting story, but also because, you know, that whole thing of them getting one over the police and the criminals getting one over the police. And also, I mean, even when I was talking to the coach and he was telling me, they had to release this player because he was released from prison. All football teams release players, but actually when a prison team releases a player, it's got a whole different meaning.
Yeah, I know, right?
So, it's a cool story. I like it. I mean...
It was a fabulous story. So much so that I even thought of going down to the Eastern Cape. I'm from the Eastern Cape, and to actually watch these guys play. Obviously, the team is also made up of prison officials. It's not just prisoners themselves. So they have to form some sort of camaraderie with the guys that have to make sure that they're in their prison cells at the end of a game. You got to make sure that if you left as an 18-man team, that you come back an 18-man team at the same time. You don't come back... Like, where's the subs?
Which is brilliant, too, because if that sort of relationship is being established between guards and prisoners, and apparently there's only two or three guards that are actually in the team and the rest are all prisoners. But, if you got that relationship, and also apparently, they would have guards that went along to matches, you know, because these are prisoners. You've got to.
I would think, rather than match officials, you know, you pull in a few correctional services officers.
No, of course.
To play the what's it called, the fourth official or the match referee.
So they had to be accompanied, but apparently those guards were in plain clothes. It was kind of a formality. Everyone was so well behaved. It was like, you know.
So they didn't abuse the privilege, yeah.
I don't know how they're doing the thing in the Eastern Cape. I mean, are they staying in a hotel?
Which is really piqued my interest, because if they had qualified in the playoffs to get to ABC Motsepe League, they are in the semi-professional realm of South African football.
And then they have to travel more.
They have to earn money.
It's semi-professional.
They have to travel more. Yeah. they will leave the Western Cape, as I understand it, to play matches.
Yeah.
Logistically, it might require whoever is the manager of the recreational bit at the Correctional Services Center. That's going to be his full-time job. He's going to be like the PRO of the.
and if they go, if they travel somewhere, do they stay in a hotel? Or do they actually have to put them in another prison? I mean, it would seem a little cruel.
It would seem cruel to sleep in a prison.
That's a good follow-up story that I'll have to do if they do get promoted. How's this going to work? It'll be interesting, yeah.
It's a pity that you're going to Egypt, to the Africa Cup of Nations, which you're going to chat about, because this is one that really, really needs a follow-up. I'm actually curious to find out I'm always interested in the human side of things. Like, you know, I'd love to find out who their captain is, right?
Mm.
And what's he in for? Mm. And you know, there's always the did he do it, did he not kind of story. Mm. And the fact that he is willing to make something of his time. And what happens if he gets scouted? You know, we've seen the likes of Jomo Sono going to attend these kind of games, looking for rare talent. Mm. We see a lot of NFD sides going to attend these kind of games. I mean, if you find a youngster that's maybe in for a misdemeanor, And you find that he's got potential, and you can bring him into an NFD side. What happens there? Can they motivate for an early release, a parole?
Yeah.
Can these guys actually get a good shot at being brought back into society through football? Which is, I know the power of the game, but this will transcend anything that we've seen in South African football ever before.
Yeah, I mean, that's looking at the story at the next level, actually, and that's actually a good, a really interesting way of looking at it, because if a player has potential as a footballer, can that affect his sentence? Can that, you know, can it affect his rehabilitation process to that he's got something to go to and he's got some potential and he can make something of his life?
And you can show the parole board about his scoring rate.
Exactly.
You can say, I scored 23 goals in 30 games.
And he got our team promoted. And
exactly. Like, sir, he's got 12 assists. We can't do without this player. Right. Mark, you're going to the Africa Cup of Nations, which is the big one. Like I said earlier in this podcast, in the show, that by the time you hear this, Mark will be deep in the land of the Pharaohs. He will be following Bafana Bafana, who by this point would have played, have Renard's former team, Côte d'Ivoire. They're also former champions. They won in 2015 with Herve Renard. Herve Renard is now with Morocco, who are the other team in South Africa's group. And he's a guy that was touted to be the next Bafana coach before Stuart Baxter swooped in and became the unlikely candidate for that job after Sheikh Mashaba was released. What do you think this Herve Renard narrative is going to do to this Group D, which also has Namibia in it?
No, absolutely. The Renard factor in that group, I think you're right, Spool. I mean, Herve Renard is the most respected coach in Africa right now.
Won it with Zambia.
Yeah, won it with Zambia.
Won it with Côte d'Ivoire.
Yeah.
Qualified for the World Cup with Morocco, is that correct?
Yes, and Morocco were underachieving for a long time before Herve arrived. They're one of the giants of African football, and he arrived there and turned them around. His respect is because... currently, I don't think there's another coach who's won the AFCON twice with two different teams. I stand corrected on that.
Yeah.
but also to have done it with Zambia, completely unheralded
that,
side.
That on its own was incredible.
I mean, that team was largely based in the PSL. They had foreign-based
Brothers.
Yeah. But absolutely, I mean, that was never a team that you would have thought could have won an AFCON.
Not in a million years.
And, okay, they were also motivated by the emotion. It was the 20-year anniversary of the plane crash where in they Gabon. Lost their team. Where they lost their great team of the 90s. So it was a very emotional Nations Cup and Herve Renard. But also just, I think, the way Renard managed to stoke that emotion and take them all the way to the final and win it. And they beat Ivory Coast.
They
the
did
final.
On penalties.
Yeah, and then he takes over an Ivory Coast team that has reached...
Also massive underachievers.
They basically 10 years had been together and been the best team in Africa and couldn't win the Nations Cup. The Nations Cup, yeah.
The year before... I'm actually mad that...
Their star player retires. Shame.
Drogba retires the year after they win the Africa Cup.
Yes,
Like, man.
for Chelsea, that's terrible.
Like, Drogba is my hero, dude. Not just because I'm a Chelsea fan. Everybody knows this. And he's one of our greatest ever players. Thank you very much. And we haven't had a quality striker like Drogba ever since. But we're not here for that. Just what he did at the Ivory Coast, you know.
So then he takes a team that has come so close, reached finals, but couldn't win it, and finally wins it with them. So, I mean, that makes Herve Renard, he's the new White Witch Doctor. He's the, you know, Trissier, but he's better than Trissier.
He's miles ahead of Trissier
and,
in my book.
And basically, he's done it with Francophone countries, and he's French-speaking, but he did it with an English-speaking country. There's something in that as well.
Yeah, Southern that he can, and Western
because
African
the cultures are
and
different.
Northern African. Yeah. I mean, within the continent, that is...
And now North Africa,
incredible. I mean, even his tenure in Morocco can be regarded as a success because they wanted to go to the FIFA World Cup and he achieved that, which is what South Africa also wanted it in for. Yeah. And we failed in that mandate to make the World Cup and he got them there even though they weren't too great. But he's one of those that will get you something that you can tick off as a success, you know? I mean, with the Ivory Coast, they wanted, like you said, they wanted it for 10 years. They had the best ever Ivory Coast team with Yaya Toure, Kolo Toure, Didier Drogba, Zaka Tiene, Givinho. I mean, that was an incredible
Solomon
team.
Kalou.
Just unbelievable team on its own, and they just couldn't get over the line. Mm. He got them over the line, got Morocco over the line, got Zambia over the line, and I think he's got this alchemy with teams. And like you said, like having a Southern African team, Western African team, and Northern African team, that's like winning in three different continents on its own. Yeah. The cultures are so vast.
Cultures are very different.
The languages are so different.
That he could adapt it's to crazy. Those cultures and be successful in all of them is it really does show Herve Renard is a magician. I believe behind the scenes he's extremely difficult to work with, but I mean, who cares? He gets results. I mean, we know results.
Maybe his players, his shirt starched.
But some of the best coaches are very difficult to work with. Yeah. I mean, Jose Mourinho. I mean, everyone. Alex Ferguson.
Yeah,
But they're very particular about how they want things done. But no, absolutely, Renard is a factor. And I think so he took Morocco to the World Cup. They were quite impressive there. They couldn't get through their group, but they played well.
Yeah.
And then maybe we'll be a bit encouraged by they didn't have an amazing qualifying campaign. We make so much of how we drew against Seychelles away, and that is a shocking result. And
that was shocking.
And we deserved...
And we had beaten them 6-0.
Yeah, and Stuart Baxter deserved to be slammed for it, the game before. But actually, Morocco could only beat Comoros 1-0 at home, and they drew away. And that's actually worse. And and they also drew away against Malawi. So maybe they didn't actually have the most. They finished top of their group over Cameroon. And they only also beat Cameroon away, but lost at lost away, but beat one at home. So it's just that Cameroon had a worse qualifying campaign. And, you know, when you got Malawi and Comoros, you expect it to be a bit easier. But I'm not going to read too much into that. Renard... at a tournament, knows what to do.
Different
at
Renard,
a tournament, yeah.
Different team altogether.
And you know, he did enough to qualify. And when you get to the tournament, I mean, he's going to analyze us.
Yeah.
It's going to be fascinating, Baxter against Renard.
And I heard that he enjoys coming to South Africa.
He does.
coming to Joburg to unwind. A couple of times he's taken his teams to South Africa for a pre-tournament sort of camp in Johannesburg. So he really loves South Africa.
He likes South Africa. He wants to coach South Africa. So
then why isn't he coaching South Africa?
Exactly. No disrespect to Stuart, but we could have got him this because he was out of contract at the time that Stuart was appointed.
Right.
And we could have got him. It was just financial. It was just that he wanted too much money according to what we wanted to pay.
Jeepers.
And it's interesting because then Stuart went on to not qualify for the World Cup. Renard did with Morocco, who hadn't for so long.
And to get him out of that contract is going to be impossible now with Safa and Dire Straits.
Yeah, no. So I think we missed a window of opportunity there. But Stuart's qualified for an AFCON. It's his first AFCON. He's got a lot to prove. It's going to be interesting. So,
right. And Stuart took a lot of flack for failing to qualify South Africa for two World Cups in both his tenures. And I think, look, I'll have to credit Safa for this, that they stuck with him. Mm. You know, they weren't too trigger happy because, you know, you've rather take one hit, you know, than take more multiple hits in the future, you know. And then I think Stuart's learned as well. He's not too arrogant as to not make tweaks. I think there were grumblings about him using his son as goalkeeper coach, grumblings about Quinton Fortune. To some extent, he listened. And I think Andre Arendse is a goalkeeper coach at Bafana now. And he surrounded himself with a lot of guys who are doing well in local coaching, guys like Rulani Mugwena, who's done very well as assistant coach both at Mamelodi Sundowns and at Orlando Pirates. I think in a way he's kind of listened, and for me, as much as we've lost Herve Renard, you have to give Stuart Baxter some level of credit in that he managed to tick one of the two boxes he was supposed to tick, which is Africa Cup of Nations qualification. And I have to say, in terms of selection, there's nothing really bizarre. Like, this is not Pierre Issa coming to straight into a starting lineup for Bafana, and we didn't even know who he was. So he's kind of really, I mean, everybody has their pick of the lot. Some people wanted Kermit Erasmus in, some people don't. You're going to get that with any squad. What do you think of the Bafana squad that eventually traveled?
Yeah, I think it's like you say, Spoor, I agree. I think Stuart is he's a solid coach and he gets a lot of flack. I think people try and put Stuart in a sort of Middendorp category, and that's incredibly
that's
unfair.
A bit harsh.
Yeah, because
I actually thought he might have won the league with SuperSport had the rumors around.
Yeah,
because they had only lost one game that January, and then he started getting touted as the next Bafana coach, which kind of threw SuperSport's season, and they were top of the league that year in January. But continue.
And I mean, yeah, Stuart is way above that sort of category, and people sort of write him off, and he's not a popular coach. We know that. And the moment things go against him, there's an outcry. And I think it goes back to when he was Bafana coach the first time. I thought actually there were elements in the press who gave him a really raw deal.
Yeah.
He was actually trying to do a good job. There was some huge politics against him. And this influenced public opinion. And when he came back, he proved that actually he's a very good coach, winning two league and cup doubles in 3 years with Kaizer Chiefs.
Yeah, and they haven't been the same since.
But this is not to say Stuart is the best Bafana coach we'll ever have or can have.
Yeah,
I would, you know, if you're going to compare, I would say Herve Renard's is clearly a much step
the
above.
Outright, yeah, the
but,
outright.
But we went for a cheaper option, and as cheaper options go, Stuart's a very, very good coach. And he's got a lot to prove, and he's finally, you know, he reached this AFCON, and he wants to, it's now his first major tournament with a national team. Yeah. You know, he's done other things. He's won leagues in Sweden. He's won leagues and cups in South Africa. He's got teams promoted in Japan. He's played UEFA Champions League. He's played Europa League.
Right.
So at club level, he's done a lot. National team, it hasn't always gone as well.
Yeah.
And this is his first time finally getting to a major tournament. Sorry, the question was about the squad. I think the squad reflects what Stuart is. He's a solid coach. Like you say, he doesn't do too many crazy things. Sometimes his starting lineups, he can be a bit conservative. You've got to play to the strengths of South African football. And you know, I think when we blew our games against Cape Verde, he just wasn't picking some of the more expressive players, and right. that backfired. Way too conservative there. But the squad is very solid, and I think he's no real surprises, and maybe one or two goalkeeper defense, but the backup players, the like front line players are all there.
Bruce Vuma,
Romaklin Patlen is not had a great season. There are other right backs.
Yeah.
Even you know, Daniel Cardoso is a good player. I like him, but are there maybe one or two more informed centre backs? But apart from that,
maybe
I thought
he's
the squad
thinking
was good.
Northern African style kind of set PC kind of defence, which Cardoso has been good
at. He is good at, yeah. And there's reasons. And I mean, Rivaldo Kutsia was there, but he pulled out. So yeah.
Right now, Mark, you wrote in your Bafana preview for the Sunday Times the previous week that Bafana have a potent strike force in Percy Tau and Lebohang Motiba. Both players are based overseas. Motiba scored 12 goals and won the French League Cup with Strasbourg, while Tau won the Player of the Season award in Belgium after stellar performances with his second-tier side, Royal Union Saint-Gilloise. I hope I said that right.
I have no idea.
Can they match up to the likes of Nicolas Pepe from the Ivory Coast and Morocco's Hakim Ziyech? Now, Ziyech, we've seen him Ajax in that sprightly Ajax team that made the semis, lost to Tottenham. Nicolas Pepe, I think, scored 22 goals in French League Earn for Lille. And he's one of the guys that is really wanted by your Liverpools, your Arsenals. Mm. Well, Chelsea can't make signings, unfortunately. Your Man United. So,
yeah.
Good players in their own right. Tau definitely ought to be playing EPL football right now.
Yeah.
Lebo Motiba to be a main man at a French League Earn side, that says a lot about him. Tall fella, agile, in your face. You know, the kind of striker I like, you know, your Drogba types, a target man will hold it up. Then you got your Taus and your ball players like Zwane, Temba Zwane, you know. Do you think we've got enough to nick some goals against these guys?
Yeah, I think we do. I think, you know, Lebo Motiba, if you look at the 12 goals that he scored for Strasbourg, he's not just a goal scorer. He's also, like you say, he's a beast of a player.
Right.
When he runs at teams, players fall off him and the players around him can feed off the scraps. And
yeah.
So he's not just about goals. I think, if we're looking at... I think the positive is that finally we've got some players who can score goals, some players who can create goals.
That's a huge positive.
Temba Zwane was one of the best wingers in the Champions League for Sundowns, reaching the semifinals this past season. And so... Yeah, absolutely. Are they quite the class of what Morocco and Ivory Coast have? Maybe not. But finally, we've got players who can score goals. I think if you look at our all-round squad, they have maybe a bit more star quality. But this thing of that we've got more players based in our league can actually be a strength.
That's 17, right? The most in AFCON.
And we've got the best league in Africa. And actually, let's use that as a strength and have better togetherness and a better strength of unity in the team. And you know, when you've got players coming from a lot of different leagues,
it does cause some sort of division.
Ivory Coast, you know, I actually think Ivory Coast, for me, they've got more star players than Morocco, but I think Ivory Coast might be the team we can beat in that opening game. And we're discussing this once this is going to go live.
You
after.
Know, so we're going to hold you accountable
but
for this.
But only
this
because
call,
Ivory Coast don't have Renard, and they also... They have a lot of star players from big clubs who don't necessarily going to play as a team.
Your Wilfred Bonis and your Zaha, Wilfred Zaha's. Yeah. It just doesn't click
when
it has to.
And if we can go in there as a unit and play as a unit, and I'm discussing this now, and it's, you know, the game's on Monday and this is going to go live, maybe I'm going to sound incredibly stupid. But I really
you'd be a genius. Or we'll be saying, oh, wow.
I hope I'm a genius.
A genius.
Yeah.
Thanks very much, Marky Mark. We have to close our conversation there. Like we said, by the time you hear this, Mark would be nice and cozy in Egypt, storming up the square, Tahrir Square there.
I'm on a budget, Trust me. I'm on a big budget. Maybe you have to edit this out because my bosses might get angry.
man, thanks for spending some time with us and chatting, of course, Africa Cup of Nations and that incredible team of prisoners and prison officials. Amazing stuff. Thanks, Mark. Enjoy Egypt.
Thanks for having me.
So we managed to catch up with Marky Mark straight after the game, after South Africa lost 1-0 to Ivory Coast. And we wanted to find out from him, just quickly, Mark, tell us, why did South Africa go down 1-0 in a game where it looked as if they were able to contain the Ivorian might? Was it because they could not get any penetration? And tell us, what did Stuart Baxter get right and what did he unfortunately get wrong in his strategy in the lead up to the game? Or maybe it was the temperature, the high temperatures that South Africa and Ivory Coast played under. What was your summation, Mark?
Hi, Spool. That's the big question, isn't it? What went right, what went wrong? Okay. So, look, there's a few things. There's positives. It's not, you know, I've seen some of the reaction and people say, oh, but you're making excuses for them again, making excuses for Baxter. It's not a disaster, the opening result. You know, we also have to remember that it was always a big ask. Ivory Coast, you just look at their quality. I mean, we've got Lebo Motiba. Yeah, that's awesome. They have Jonathan Kojia, who is probably bigger than Lebo, faster than Lebo, shoots harder than Lebo, is more mobile than Lebo. You know, I'm not saying he's necessary. He's not streets ahead of him. Lebo's a good player if he gets the service. Kojia almost doesn't even need a service because, you know, he can just run through players. And look, they've got Pepe, and Pepe was beautiful. You could see with his first where he beat Mokocho down the right, fed Kojia. Kojia slipped. It could have been a goal, you know, in the opening 11 minutes. Their player power was awesome, yeah. Look, from Bafana, that doesn't mean that we should be going out there and showing them too much respect, and I think that we did. I think that's where maybe one of the biggest areas where we went a bit wrong. Percy Tau also just admitting basically that we just couldn't get our attack. We had the wrong strategy in attack, is actually what he said. He said our plan of attack was not right, which is interesting. I think the positive is we were beautifully structured, really, really wonderfully. And like you say, we completely contained Ivory Coast. The heat was a big leveler, but look, South Africa also had to work in that heat to contain Ivory Coast. And I think the manner in which they did it, I mean, for me, Mokocho and Furman were actually outstanding, protecting their back four. And actually our back four wasn't nearly as caught for pace as I thought it would be. The back four were excellent. We really have a really good defensive block of six. And that's a really, really big positive. The negative is that, on top of that, as good as Ivory Coast might be, you've got to try to rattle them. And I just didn't think we did enough. And there were times when we got our quick passing together. And again, yeah, the heat is a factor, but there were times when we got our quick passing together where you could see they struggled to deal with it, and they didn't like it when we, you know, these teams, these big physical teams, they don't like it when our quick South Africans get their quick passing together. I thought if the heat actually benefited anyone, it probably was Ivory Coast, because we do like that quick passing game. And I think to play at that tempo in that kind of 37 degrees heat is basically impossible for us. So yes, there is that factor, and that's not making excuses. That is just actually the reality of it.
Right, Marky Mark, thank you so much for that excellent analysis. You really painted a great picture for us out there in Egypt. But before I let you go, buddy, could you please give me an upset and playmaker of the week? I know this is putting you under the bus a little bit here, and it's going to test a little bit of how much of the other sports you've seen in the last week or so. I'll start you off pretty easy. If you can give me your upset of the week between these following options: Angola holding Tunisia to 1-1 in their first Group E AFCON game, Pakistan beating the Proteas by 49 runs on Sunday, and the FIFA Women's World Cup hosts France beating Brazil 2-1 in the last 16 also on Sunday. And can you give us our playmaker of the week as well while you're at it? Between these following options: Ronwen Williams' goalkeeping performance versus Ivory Coast, South Africa's women's hockey team beating Thailand 7-0, and I don't know if you follow tennis, but Roger Federer winning his 10th Gary Weber title in Halle.
Okay, Zbul, yeah, sure. Okay, putting me on the spot with, sure, you're actually keeping me informed about what's happening in global sport, because I'm in Egypt and I'm hugely focused on the AFCON. Yeah, no, totally. Okay, so upset of the week. Yeah, France beating Brazil 2-1 at the Women's World Cup. Yeah, we know Brazil are a power. France, not as much a power in the women's game. And yeah, I mean, Pakistan beating the Proteas, that wasn't an upset that was going to form. And Angola holding Tunisia, yeah, look, the AFCON's a big leveler and there's no underdogs here. And then the Playmaker of the Week, this is going to sound a little biased, but I'm going to give it to Ronwin. Ronwin's performance against Ivory Coast, even though we couldn't win, he was outstanding. He finally put his shakiness in the Bafana jersey behind him. He could be a big player for the future. He might even be bigger than Itumeleng Nkunie one day. And the beginning of that started in this game. Yeah, the women's win against Thailand. Well done to them, yeah. And Federer, 10th Gary Weber. Yeah, Roger Federer, I mean, he's getting old, but he's still a master champ. So that's why I give it to Ronwin.
That's it from me, Sbum Chigeliso, and you've been listening to the Sports Live podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Do also catch us on timeslive.co.za, as well as Sowetan Live, Business Live. We are also on Iono FM, the Apple Podcast Store, or wherever you get your podcasts. It could be Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, Pocket Cast, wherever. To connect with us, please use the hashtag SportsLive. Share your comments with us at TimesLive or at Sowetan Live on Twitter. A big thank you goes out to the Multimedia Live team led by Scott Peter Smith and producer Paige Muller, as well as the TESOL Black Star Digital Sports Department headed by Mninawa Mchana Ntloko. Our sound and audio mixer is Innocent Manyike. From us at the SportsLive podcast, it's goodbye for now.